The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. And as many of our listeners know, we've focused quite a few programs now on the impacts of climate change. And the reason why is because the public health community on a state level, on a national level, and a worldwide level has recognized that climate change is going to have profound impacts on public health and community health and individual health and wellness. The last United Nations report talked about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, said that climate change is widespread, rapid, and intensifying, and some trends are now irreversible, at least during the present time frame. And the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the working group's report was nothing less than a code red for humanity. The alarm bells are deafening, and the evidence is irrefutable. So, folks, it is here. And one of the effects, probably the most critical effect, is the impact on water and drinking water. Why? Because water is the primary medium through which the effects of climate change will happen. Water availability, even prior to climate change, was always a bit in question, but now it's even becoming less predictable in many places. And, you know, with incidents of flooding threatening to destroy water points and sanitation facilities that contaminate water resources are increasing. And other impacts such as, you know, sea level rise, flooding, heat stress, all impacting water supplies. So on that note, we have with us a return guest who is right at the at ground zero with all of that, and at least in our local region. And he is Dan Shapley. Dan is currently interim Hudson River Keeper and currently interim Hudson River Keeper, Vice President of Programs, and Dan is a lifelong resident of the Hudson Valley, an environmental advocate with a background in journalism. Now, River Keeper's mission is to protect and restore the Hudson River from source to sea and safeguard drinking water supplies through advocacy rooted in community partnerships, science, and law. And Dan's going to tell us a lot more about the impacts of climate change that I just briefly touched on. So welcome, Dan. It's good to have you back.
Thank you, Vin. I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for focusing on this topic for this series of radio programs. It's really important and wonderful to see.
Dan, before we dig into the subject at hand, can you just give our listeners a brief background on River Keeper, when, why, and how it got started, and who are the people involved?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. River Keeper started about 55 years ago now with a group of guys, mostly fishermen, down in Westchester County, who found themselves just disgusted with the state of the river that they were fishing in, that they were trying to enjoy. You know, this was before the Clean Water Act. This was at a time when factories and other industrial pollution was sewage from our communities was really flowing pretty much unfettered into the waterways. So what these people did is found a law that had been on the books since the 1880s, but hadn't really been used effectively and it outlawed dumping in navigable waters. So they took that law, they dusted it off, they brought suit against the Penn Central Railroad, which is still the same facility that we, you know, pass through in Croton when we're taking the Metro North line down to the city. That same rail facility at that time was dumping waste oil directly into the river and dumping all of its waste products. So they brought that suit and were successful. That stopped that pipe discharge and brought them essentially a bounty. That law was written that half of the penalty went to the government and half went to the citizens that brought the suit. So they used that money to go after the next polluter and the next. And in that way, even before the Clean Water Act that we know today was passed, they were starting to clean up some of those major sources of pollution. On through the, you know, through the decades, the organizations evolved, but we still see that kind of ability to understand the law and to see citizens empowered by the law remains a bedrock part of what we do. We also have a boat on the water, which is integral to our work to make sure that we are the ears and the eyes of the river and can get people out and to see things from the perspective of the water. And we have a big community focus, whether that's through community science and gathering water quality samples or through just partnering with communities and community groups to try and advance good policies and to make positive change where it comes to water.
And Riverkeeper became really, as I understand it, a model for many other communities like the Chesapeake folks down there and many others throughout the country. And Dan, so to the subject of climate change, can you give our listeners, let's say in broader terms, and we'll get into the specifics just a little bit later in the program, how is drinking water threatened by the impacts of climate change? Can you touch on that?
Sure. I think, and I'm glad to focus on drinking water for this program because I think we are becoming much more widely aware of some of the big impacts of climate change. You know, we know that the summertime temperatures are going to be hotter, and that's going to cause a lot of stress. I'm sure you've had programs focus on that. We know that the sea level is rising and will rise, and that's going to cause stress for infrastructure at the shoreline, communities at the shoreline. We know that flooding is going to become more intense and is already becoming more intense, and that's, you know, has direct impacts on people in so many places. But the reason we're kind of focusing on drinking water is that it seems to be a little bit outside of the view of most of us when we're talking about adapting to climate change. And some of the impacts that we're concerned about really come as a consequence of increased precipitation and higher temperatures. What the increased precipitation does, and we're seeing already, we just had Ida, which was a great reminder of what can happen with really big storms, but we're seeing these really intense storms coming with greater frequency. And those big storms carry with them a lot of runoff. And as that water runs off across the landscape, it picks up pollutants, carries it into our water. This happens all the time, but the intensity of the rainfall is changing, and that's changing the risk that's coming from that and the load of pollutants that are kind of flowing along with it. Where the center of concern lies right now is with that runoff comes excess nutrients, whether that's from sewage, our treated sewage or our untreated sewage, comes from our lawn fertilizers, our agricultural fertilizers, and other sources. That is nutrient on the landscape when we're trying to grow something, but it's nutrient in the water too, and it fuels algal growth, algae. And as algae grows, it poses a couple of key concerns for drinking water. One is that as we disinfect water to make it safe, the chlorine that's often used interacts with algae and similar other organic matter in the water and produces what's called disinfection byproducts. And these were among the first regulated drinking water contaminants because they are a concern. They cause, you know, exposure over a long period of time can increase chances of bladder cancer, increase chance of reproductive harm and other health effects. The other concern is that some of these types of algae are what we call harmful algal blooms, because the type of algae itself can produce toxins, and those toxins are not filtered by our drinking water treatment systems. So what we're seeing is this with the status quo, with the same kind of underlying pollution burden, we're going to have more problems in the future because the rate of precipitation is increasing, and also because the increased temperature, warmer waters is also an ingredient that helps to fuel these algal blooms. So. Mm-hmm. One of the key concerns that we have for all the communities that rely on reservoirs and rivers, lakes for their drinking water supplies.
And so, you know, just so our listeners understand, the Hudson takes its water supplies from a multitude of sources, right? Streams, creeks, sewage outflows that come in, stormwater drains, all of which can carry multiple levels of contaminants that go into the river. And then many communities in the Hudson, mid-Hudson region obtain their drinking water from the river, correct?
That's true, yes. But I want to be clear, those risks that I'm describing are not just for the folks who are drawing water from the Hudson River directly, but any community with a reservoir, which is, you know, most of our bigger cities and villages rely on reservoirs for their drinking water supply because they need that volume of water. Mm-hmm. We can get into a little more what the specific concerns are for the Hudson, but really we're talking broadly about a lot of communities.
There. Watersheds, right. I'm looking right now as we're recording this program at the Ashokan Reservoir where I live. And certainly this is a primary reservoir for New York City metro area. And, you know, the city goes through great lengths to try to protect the purity of that water. But I'm certainly flooding, climate change can really impact that. And Dan, we want to hear a lot more, but first we're going to just take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Heart attacks won't wait. If you ever have symptoms of a heart attack, you need to get to the nearest emergency department, preferably one with the technology and expertise to stop a heart attack in its tracks. Health Alliance Hospital, right here on Broadway in Kingston, has expanded cardiac services, including catheterization and electrophysiology. Now, for many people, Health Alliance in Kingston is the closest option to find treatment of clogged arteries, irregular heartbeats, and to limit damage from a heart attack already in process. For the first time, we have these advanced heart health services based right here in Ulster County. This expansion is part of a larger plan to bring advanced cardiac services to Ulster County and the surrounding communities. If you have heart attack symptoms, do not wait. Call 911 and get to the closest emergency department. At Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston, we are ready to see you now. That's Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston. WMC Health. Advancing care here.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and our guest today is Dan Shapley from Riverkeeper. And Dan and I have been talking about the impacts of climate change on drinking water supplies, and a little bit later we're going to be talking about its impact on low-income communities. Dan, before the break, we were talking about runoff into our reservoir and reservoirs, and also the Hudson River, which many communities take drinking water from. But let's stay with the reservoir for a moment. The Ashokan here, where I live, is the primary reservoir for the New York metro area. So talk to us a little bit more about runoff and flooding and how that might impact it.
It's hard to overstate the importance of the Ashokan Reservoir for the state of New York. It's about 40% of the drinking water supply for New York City. And that water supply doesn't just serve New York City, but many communities in the Hudson Valley, including several in Ulster County, New Paltz among them. So that is a really, really important drinking water source. And as we have seen, unfortunately, this year, the first part of the year, the way New York City manages that reservoir has a huge impact downstream with the way it's released the muddy water. And the climate change connection here is the source of that mud. It doesn't just spring up from the reservoir. It comes from the hills, comes from the Catskills as rainwater washes and erodes the sediments. So the more intense, more frequent storms are going to create the conditions that we're going to see ever more frequent episodes with that high turbidity, muddy water flowing into the Ashokan, which just puts a big spotlight on what comes next. And as Ulster County has been advocating, Riverkeeper has been advocating, we really want to see New York City step up and admit that the status quo solution is inadequate. It harms the downstream communities. It's also not going to serve the drinking water supply well into the future. So we really need some creative and frankly, probably some real investments. It's going to cost money to manage that reservoir and create some engineering solutions to deal with the turbidity that comes down out of the Catskills and plan for the next 100 years which are going to be very different from the last 100 from a climate perspective.
And isn't the city, though, and I, you know, forgive my limited understanding, but aren't they a bit in a catch-22 in terms of if they don't release the water regularly, it builds up to a point where they may have to release it all at once, which might even be more devastating. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, there, as you said, there's a complicated set of conditions. So any one statement gets kind of, you know, like contradicted by the next. But yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a complicated challenge that they have, and I don't want to underplay that at all. But there are, you know, there are ways that they could leave excess room in the reservoir to accept more floodwaters when they come. There are other management and engineering solutions that they could implement in combination. But the process they just went through to look at alternatives, they essentially looked at each in isolation, rejected each of them without considering any combination or any new novel solutions that were suggested. So what we're hoping, the you know, incredibly intelligent and dedicated engineers that the city has employed to manage its water supply really get, you know, as a matter of leadership, are pointed to and said, this is a problem, it's real, and we want to solve it. Right now, we've been seeing too much kind of avoidance of the realities of the impacts of the money charges, which is, you know, the easiest and the cheapest solution for the city, but not the best for everyone.
Right. And Dan, just to switch gears a little bit so that we don't run out of time and we can cover some of the other impacts. There's a term called environmental justice, and it applies to how climate change is impacting low-income communities. And in this case, we'll be focusing on drinking water supplies. Can you tell our listeners what that term means and how it's manifesting locally?
Sure. Environmental justice is a concept that's been around for several decades. And that's a description of the fact that particularly Black and other communities of color and low-income communities suffer disproportionately from environmental harms. And that's not an accident. That's because of the many of the systems that have been in place in our laws have pushed those burdens onto communities and spared whiter, wealthier communities. With climate change, everybody on everyone's mind, because the impacts of climate change are going to disproportionately affect those same folks. When it comes to drinking water, and the way these things connect, and that we're trying to emphasize, is that the communities that rely on those drinking water supplies that are reservoirs and rivers are almost exclusively outside of the community's borders and therefore outside of their control. They typically might own just a little strip of land right around the edge of the reservoir, but none of the streams that flow into them. And in that way, they don't really control the quality of the water that's flowing into their reservoirs. So we see that as a real environmental issue. And as I described at the beginning part of the program, as climate change is kind of affecting and changing the risks and amplifying some of the risks to those drinking water supplies, the folks who are going to be most affected are, again, the Black, the other people of color, and low wealth communities that rely on those drinking water supplies. So we're really trying to both focus on, get attention to the impacts of climate change on these drinking water supplies, and also develop new legal tools and resurrect legal tools that have been sort of dormant to help those communities empower them to really better be able to set rules that will protect their drinking water supplies now and into the future.
And what would be an example of that? Can you just give us like what one of those tools or might be, or how you would do that?
Yeah, I mean, one is just starting this summer with the Drinking Water Source Protection Program. And that's a planning effort the state's supporting, helping communities to look upstream and develop programs much, you know, something like what New York City has, to think in a multifaceted way about how to protect reservoirs, you know, far outside of city limits. And another one that we're really keen on is and it really goes back to, you know, a similar story to the origin story of Riverkeeper I was telling you, but it's a state law called Watershed Rules and Regulations. The state health department can update these watershed rules and regulations for each and every community around the state so that they have specific rules to help them protect their specific drinking water supplies from whatever threats they face. The health department hasn't really used its authority to update these outside of a couple of exceptions being New York City and Syracuse. So what we're really trying to do is put some pressure on the state health department to actively update those for communities and give the downstream communities some more tools to enforce rules that'll protect their drinking water supplies upstream.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And Dan, you know, one of the things that I've read about climate change is, and you know, we touched on a little bit, was sea level rise. So, and you know, like, if you could talk a little bit about how that impacts the Hudson in terms of like, you know, wetlands and so on, but also there's a secondary or maybe a complementary effect of the sea level temperatures rising, which also impacts the water's ability to retain oxygen, which in turn is critical to marine life. What are the impacts on the Hudson with those two?
Well, I think the water temperature in the Hudson's already up about 2 degrees since I was born, more or less since the 70s, and even warmer in the wintertime. So that's a change we've already seen. And the sea level rise, likewise, has already increased, will continue to increase. Some of the impacts are, you know, if you look at, where do we have our infrastructure? And that includes water infrastructure, our sewage treatment plants, our drinking water intakes. They're all right at the sea level. So some of that infrastructure is at risk, is vulnerable. Village of Rhinebeck is an example of a community that looked at the risks and then found that they needed to take some relatively simple but important actions to raise the level of their pump stations for their drinking water intake so that they can make sure they get water up to the community, even if the sea level is rising and there's a storm surge or there's a storm that creates a flooding in a new degree. So there's the basic aspect of just more water being higher up. When you look at we've had a couple of fish kills in the last couple years where fish called menhaden has died off in large numbers in the lower part of the river, and that's probably due to a combination of warm water temperatures, low dissolved oxygen, and also a viral pathogen that is probably passed potentially from our own bodies out through our sewage and into the water where it's affected the fish. So there's a confluence of, you know, different factors that can affect both life in the river and our use of it. Another I'll mention quickly where it comes back to the Hudson as a drinking water source is the salt content of the river. You know, it's an estuary. So as some scenarios where we have a prolonged drought might involve scenarios over time where we see a greater risk of that salt water creeping further upstream at parts of the summer. So it's affecting the Poughkeepsie Highland, Esopus, others that draw drinking water from the river.
Interesting. And Dan, so, we're pretty well aware of the serious consequences of climate change. And, you know, you've just talked very eloquently about them here in our area. But it's one thing to be aware of threats. It's another thing to do something about them, because if we don't have practical steps that we can take in our lives, it can lead to, maybe despair. Maybe that's an extreme term, but tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about what we talked about today and how they can personally get involved in being part of the solution.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, a place to start is riverkeeper.org, our website, and the Action Center particularly. We try and keep that up to date with things people can do that will really have an impact, and typically involves influencing a government decision on one thing or another. Right now, for instance, the state is deciding whether to give permits to the Danskammer power plant, which is down in Orange County, but very close to the Ulster border, and would be fired with natural gas, a fossil fuel. And so we have the chance to say no. You know, we're going to go to renewables and not invest in another several decades of burning fossil fuels here in the Hudson Valley. Just one example of a way we can try and stave off future climate change by preventing the pollution that causes it today.
Right. And I encourage our listeners to please go to Riverkeeper and even other places online, multitude of environmental organizations, and a lot of information on how you can be part of the solution by employing renewables in your home, transportation wise. But that's all the time we have for today. Dan, thank you so much for the work that you and your colleagues do. You, Riverkeeper, has been a pioneer, and we are so grateful to have your organization and people like you working on our behalf in the Hudson Valley. Thanks again. That's all the time we have today. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.